Welcome to Power, Strength and Vulnerability, the Mental Health Podcast. It's time to make mental health a normal conversation with your host, Shane Kelton.
All right, we just started and no, I don't sing. Welcome to another podcast, Power, Strength and Vulnerability. I'm your host, Shane, and I just got thrown off by a really silly question by a host today, and I definitely don't sing, Alicia. Welcome, Alicia Hill from Technical. I can't even say the business name. Can you please say your business name for me?
I'm Alicia Hill, and I'm from Tactical Fitness.
There we go. Oh, gee whiz, I haven't started. Wow, you really threw me that. I don't sing, so people don't want to hear me singing either.
I thought there'd be like a little singing intro into it. I thought that would set the tone for the rest of the convo.
There's an intro prior to this, which has already been set up, which I didn't do because never been the biggest fan of my own voice, so I got a professional to do that. Completely thrown me, but that's okay. This is how we roll. What's happening? How are you?
I'm pretty good. It's been a long day, and it's only, God, 1:15. So, yeah, I'm going good.
You're going good. You off air, we were talking about the fact that you've just locked yourself in the garage. The two kids and the partner are inside.
Yeah.
Mess.
So yeah, we're in Melbourne, so we're stage 4 lockdown at the moment. So I've turned the garage into my solace, my place where I come to be productive and to work, and I can shut the door and just lock the noise out in the background, kind of a little bit. I can still hear them through the brick walls shouting at each other. But it's an escape, and that's what we sometimes need for a little bit every day.
Yeah, we all need our, and you said off air as well, you're very independent. And so it's very important that you do have that time, because I can only imagine that if you don't have that time, you'd be a ticking time bomb around the kids.
Oh, 100%. Definitely. That we time our 60 minutes. So for the outdoor activity, Jason, and we're probably breaking the COVID rules here, but Jason will go for a walk in the morning, and then I'll go in like mid-afternoon, so we get that time out, fresh air to ourselves, and then we both take the kids out in the afternoon just for a walk around the block, so they get out as well, because they get cabin fever as much as we do, but they just don't really know how to vocalize it as well, so they do it in acting out and screaming and shouting and just running around like crazy little people.
That's actually funny, because I think a lot of adults show it in the exact same way because of the lack of understanding of their own emotions. So it's not just kids at this current time doing that.
Yeah.
So we'll touch on COVID now and how it's affected you and how you've managed to get through the last sort of, I won't say get through, how you've managed the last 6 to 10 months of a complete change of life to your family, to your business, and then we'll get into more of your story.
Yeah. So it's been crazy. I'm in the health and fitness industry, so we were one of the first impacted places to close. In the beginning, the first week, I was super, super stressed, and I just thought to myself, oh, my God, what do we do? How do we do it? I was petrified that we were going to lose all of our team, all of our clients, because that's our source of income. And I didn't know how I was going to provide them with the same support, the same motivation, the same guidance that we do when we're face-to-face in the gym. Then we figured out that we were going to go online, we were going to do the Zoom, everything was going to be great. So we kicked that all off. It was excellent. Really, really, really good at building everyone's motivation back up. We were all obviously in the same situation, all at home, all just managing the feelings and the emotions that we were going through. So it was awesome. But I didn't realize until we were allowed to reopen on the 22nd of June just how much mental energy it took to show up every single day and be positive and be happy and show up on social media trying to promote my business all the time. And I was just emotionally drained. And during the time of closure, we'd painted the gym, we'd made it look all pretty and put so much effort and time into turning it into what I wanted it to be, like this holistic place to come as a woman and just feel good and be in a community of like-minded people. So when we got back in, following all the COVID rules, and then what, it was 2.5 weeks, and they were like, boom, business is closed.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, that's so cool. That's sweet. Like, I've got it. I know what I do. I've done it last time. It's all good. Come on, let's go. Let's do it. And then it was about 4 days in, and it hit me like a train, just what we had just gone through for that last 3 months, and how much energy it took and how much time it was taking to show up and be present, that I didn't look after myself at all. I didn't look after my own energy and making myself feel good as well. And I had a complete just shutdown, and I was like, nope. I went into my hole. I was like, I can't do this again. I don't want to do this again. And I was scared. I was really, really scared, because I thought, we don't know how long this is going to last. We don't know if we're going to be open by the end of the year, if it's going to be in 8 weeks, 10 weeks, like what are we going to do? How are we going to keep all these amazing people that have supported us for so long wanting to still rock up and show up? And, you know, it's my business. I always, it's my third baby. I've put my blood, sweat and tears into it. And for the last 4 years, and the thought of it just disappearing out of no fault of my own just really hit hard about 3-4 weeks ago. And I was like, what do I do? How do I come out of this? How do we keep on pushing on? Because, you know, when you feel like there's nothing to look forward to because you haven't got an end date or an end in sight, I was just like, I can't do this anymore. This is horrible. So
it's not what you signed up for.
Yeah, it's not what you signed up for. And I didn't think, you know, it's not what my clients signed up for either. They didn't sign up to come on camera, but I was just too in my own head about it. And everyone was loving it. Everyone's loving the communication, the Zoom classes. It's because we're all in the same situation. We're all at home. It's not just me at home. It's everyone. And I forgot about that. I forgot that, you know, we're all in the same situation. We're all probably feeling the same way. I just got really carried on with my own feelings. And I think I needed to do that because I didn't recognize them previously. And it just all came at once. And I was like, oh my God, this isn't working. So yeah, and I had to freak out.
I think it's really good to explain that to people, because there's probably people listening that are probably still maybe in that, it'll be good, it'll be good, it'll be good. But there, I think we all need to have a moment where we go, we actually, like, it's acknowledging that we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's really scary for people to do. It's that's handing yourself over to the universe, and no one likes to let go of control like that. So it's a really powerful thing you've done by just having your moment.
Yeah. It's a long moment, but it was worth it, because I did. I came out, and it took me a good 2-3 weeks, but I came out of it and I was like, yep, I'm focused. I know where I'm going. I just needed that time. I needed the time to feel like utter rubbish and be in my own head for a little bit. But I think it's powerful when you can understand that, like you said, and know that you're not going to sit there forever. It's just this period that you need to go through. And I went through it and I came out of it. And, with more focus and determination and just a fire in my belly to be like, no, I'm not going to let this defeat my business or me and let it affect my family, basically, because it's a lot to have over your head.
It's extremely difficult circumstances for everyone at the moment. We'll touch on last thing about COVID is, how are the kids going with it? Because I know there'll be a lot of listeners with kids, and I think parents can be so scared to let people know they're struggling with their kids. So I think it's really important that we touch on how the kids are going and how you're going with the kids, because despite them being 6 and 2, you're spending 24 hours a day with them, where prior you would get breaks along the way. So this is extremely difficult for everyone.
So with the I'll go more on Poppy. So she's my six-year-old, my little girl, and it's her first year of prep. So it was a scary year right from January, going from kinder, leaving all of her friends to go to a school where she only knew one or two people. Then she loved school. She thrived in it. She liked the social environment. It was awesome. And then term one was over, and then she never really went back to school after that. And during the school holidays, she was super excited. She's like, yep, school holidays. And I was in panic mode thinking, how the hell are we going to juggle my fiance being at work, my two-year-old at home, Poppy having to homeschool? And I thought that I was going to be like this Instagram mom. I was going to have like, I went out to Officeworks. I went and got posters and all of this stuff to homeschool, basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I've got this. I can do this. I can homeschool. I can run a business. I can look after a two-year-old and do all the other things. And week one started, and of remote learning, she absolutely hated it. And we never, ever, ever found a passion for it. She really struggled with me being teacher and mum at the same time. And although I tried to explain it to her that I'm not her teacher, I am mum, but I'm going to help her learn. And she just didn't understand why she couldn't go to school, why she couldn't have her teacher, why she couldn't be around her friends, why she couldn't go and play on the playgrounds, all of those things. And with Poppy, she's already gone through so much in her short period of life anyway. And she's very emotionally intelligent, but she isn't in a sense a communicator where she will explain how she's feeling. She won't really talk about it. And she won't act out. She'll just revert. She'll be like a hermit crab and she'll go in her shell. So there's me stressed because I'm not homeschooling. I couldn't do it. After about 4 weeks, I went, nah, I'm not doing this. This isn't working. Me and her were sat like, and I'm sure many parents will resonate with this, but we would be sat at the kitchen table. She'd be like, Mom, I hate you. I don't want to do this. You're the worst teacher ever. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't want to teach you. I hate this. I don't want to do it either. So we would both just be shouting, and Jason would just be like, this is my fiance. He'd be like, I don't know what to do here. What do I do? And I'm like, you're not helping. And so just there was just this circle of just, can I swear? I'm like, can we do that?
Circle
of shit. Like everyone was just angry. And I emailed her teacher and I said, look, this is not working for me. It's not working for her and it's not working for us. I'm like, we're taking a mental health break or a well-being break for a week. I'm like, you can send all the tasks in if you want to, go for it. We're not doing them this week. And we didn't do them. And from there, I just said, I'm going to do what works for me, because I was just putting so much stress on her to learn, but she doesn't want to learn through an iPad. She's kinesthetic. She wants to be doing stuff. She wants to be holding things and writing and doing things like she would in a classroom. So I listened to her, and I'm really glad that I did, because I think she just wanted to be heard. And we went with what she wanted to do instead of what they were wanting us to do. So I just said, look, what are the basics? What does she need to have, like, be able to do confidently by the time she returns back to school? And they said, she needs to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And I went, sweet. I'm not doing the tasks. I'm going to teach her in a way that she wants to be taught. And if that's not cool with you, that's not cool with you. But this is what we're doing for her, because she was really struggling. And she still is. Like, if she wants to, in the mornings, we've kind of got like a loose routine, and she's fine with it. She's learning, she's adapting, she's done a check-in, her reading's fine, her writing's on track. And just as parents, we've just put way too much pressure on ourselves to hold the fort as being a parent, a teacher, and all the other things. And we've completely forgotten that our kids aren't getting the best of us at the moment, because we're stressed, we're uptight, and we're upset. And they're kind of just like the sponge that's absorbing all of that energy.
So, yeah, kids pick up energy so easily and 100%. Quickly.
So I was like, nope, we're not doing it. My son, he's two, so he's mainly been at home the whole time anyway. There was an interim where he was at childcare. But I think it's just the social interaction with kids his own age. It will be interesting to see what he's like around other children in when he's allowed to be around other children. And I'm sure most parents with young children that are 1.5 toddlers, it's going to be a difficult transition back into socialization for them because they have been so used to not being around children their own age and interacting with kids that are the same age and have the same motor abilities and language abilities as them. So that concerns me, but you just got to wait and see what happens and just support them as it goes.
Take it one step at a time. And when it comes to the time, thankfully the other kids at his age will be in the same boat as well. So, which I guess is a whole different ball game for the childcare workers and kindergarten teachers out there, because they're going to be dealing with kids who are much more developed in some ways, but so underdeveloped in other ways. So it's going to be a whole different ball game for them.
Yeah.
In the next 2 to 10 years, really. 100%. However long this takes.
Because we don't know what the emotional, especially for kids, we don't understand what the impact is going to be for them when they do return back to school, when they are around each other, because they've been taught for the past 7 months, you know, don't go near people, don't hug them, don't touch them, don't do this, don't. There's been so many things that have been like, you can't. So it's like, what can they do? Like, you can't go to the playground, you can't hug your friends, you can't go to birthday parties. All of these things, we don't know what emotional effect it's going to have on them. And I don't think as adults we will understand it either.
Yeah, and I think the true ramifications will probably come through for years on the effect that it has on them. And hopefully by the time the 1, 2, 3-year-olds reach school, primary school, high school, they'll have courses, classes that can help them better understand their emotions and start to teach them things that can help them look back and say, oh yeah, that was strange. That was a strange time. That was different. It's not, that's not reality anymore. Like hopefully there's a vaccine or something. But
and I'm kind of just grateful that I've got children at the moment that are young, that are 6 and 2, because I couldn't imagine what it's like to be a parent of a teenager at the moment and having to go through this with them, because they want that social life. Like, they've thrived on it for so many years, and I feel for them.
I can definitely say that there's a lot of parents struggling with that, because I've had close to 5 or 6 sets of parents reach out about their kids between the age of 14 and 17 showing signs of mental health issues for the first time in their life. Like, these happy kids just completely destructing right in front of their eyes, and they're not able to, they don't have, I guess, the mental capacity or the knowledge to actually help them through that. So it is, and the ramifications for that, for that age bracket where you start to be influenced by social media, drugs, alcohol, all of that, it's quite scary. And you can hear the tone of the parents when they call you, is genuine fear that they're going to lose their son or daughter. So, but there's challenges for all age brackets. So it's very easy to compare, but I don't think that's necessarily going to help anyone.
Yeah.
So let's start at the start. Where was Alicia born? What was her childhood like?
So I'm originally from the UK. I've got a bit of an accent. Sometimes it comes and goes.
It's not as prevalent as what it was when you went through my posing class that day. That day,
the accent, that was a good day.
Very, very fluent. Yes, it was a very enjoyable day. So born in the UK.
Yeah, I was born in England in Portsmouth with my mum, obviously. How else would I have got here?
Oh, lucky.
And my childhood was colourful. Let's use the word colourful. So my mum, she was a single mum, and I'm her only child. I'm also my dad's only child. He didn't want anything to do with me when I was a kid. He accused and said to my mum that I wasn't his. They were young. My mum was 20 when she was pregnant with me, 21 when she had me. And so my dad was of a similar age as well. They were into the rave scene, out, clubbing, drugs. Yep. My dad more so than my mum. So when I was born, he just went, nope, no thank you, and disappeared for a long time. So my mum was raising me on her own with the help of her mum and my dad's mum as well. So I had both grandparents. My dad's mum always wanted a part of my life and stood by that. And so she was really well supported by her mother-in-law and her mum as well. So as a kid, I went to, I think, 9 different schools. I moved houses. I think I've lived in around maybe upwards of 30 different homes, which is roughly like one a year. I think there was a lot of houses. So we settled down. I unfortunately watched my mum go through a very, very violent relationship with her ex-husband. He had 2 children as well that were very violent towards me, and as was he. So she was married to him for a while. I think, I don't really know what drew her to him. I've never really asked, to be honest. But I remember that it was in November and it was a Wednesday night, and he'd done something to her and he'd done something to me. And my mum just grabbed the duvet covers or the doonas off our beds and she chucked us into the car, and we drove and we slept in the car somewhere. And then we never went back there.
How old were you?
I was probably about 6 or 7. So it was one of like my early memories. And I just remember her, it was in the middle of the night and she grabbed our stuff. And yeah, we just got in the car and we left, and we didn't go back. I never saw him again after that day. And
did you feel safe leaving despite that being uprooted? Did it feel good to leave, or
no,
was it just so scary?
I can't remember. I honestly can't remember how I felt. I just thought, this is happening again, because we'd been to so many different houses and we were uplifting and moving all the time. We were never in one place for too long. So, and the way that I was treated and the way that his kids would treat me, I'd kind of just, you know, I was young. I thought that was normal. I thought, you know, that's what happens. Even though I would be upset, I would be crying about it, I just thought that's what happens. And then I couldn't tell you if I felt relieved or not. I think I might have just blanked it out. I just remember leaving and never seeing him again, really. And going in to live with my nan. And we lived there for quite a while. And I'd moved schools again in that period as well. So I'd gone from one school to another school, uplifting, meeting new people, all of these things. And we lived with my nan, like I said, for a very long time. I can't really remember how long. And then my mum repartnered and she met who she's now married to, and which is my stepdad. And I moved to schools again to go to a school closer. So throughout my like primary school, I'd been to three different schools, basically. So I really struggled with making connections, and I didn't struggle with making friends. I made friends easily, but I never knew how to keep them because I was so used to leaving and not seeing them again, and or going. It was like anything when I was a young kid, any sport, any extra school activity, it would always start and then stop.
Was it, did it get to a point where you didn't want to build those connections consciously or subconsciously because you felt like it was going to go anyway? So what was the point?
Yeah, so that happened a little bit later on, not so much when I was younger, but once my mum repartnered, this is where the story gets a little bit iffy. So we were living with him, and I was in the UK. It would have been year five, so I would have been roughly maybe, I don't know, 8 or 9. Yeah, I would have been 8, 9, 9 or 10, something like that. And we moved in to live with him. They'd been seeing each other for quite some time. She was like, yep, this is legit. This is where I want to go. So we ended up leaving my grandmother's house to move in with him. And he had 3 kids. They all lived in different parts of the world, basically. He didn't really have much to do with any of them. So he was very accepting of me when we first started our relationship, I guess, or friendship. Yep. And I just think my mum might have struggled slightly in the sense of when they were dating, it was just those two. It was just them. And then you're throwing a child into the mix 24/7. It can become difficult. And she was always very focused on her career. Like, I have absolutely no memories of me and my mum growing up. Absolutely none. The only memories I have of her are pretty bad ones, of bad experiences together, just bad things. I just have really bad, horrible memories of me and my mum growing up. No fond, happy, kind ones. All of those memories I have are from with my grandparents and with my, like, with my nan or my granddad. And none of that happened. We didn't have that mother-daughter relationship. So she was working full-time. Stepdad was working full-time. So from a very early age, I was given a lot of responsibility, and I think I was forced to grow up a lot quicker than what I was supposed to have. So I was 9 or 10 years old, and they didn't trust me enough to let me go into the house after school if they weren't there. So I'd finish school at 3, 3:15. They wouldn't get home until maybe like 4, 4:30. But as an 8 or a 9 year old, that's a long period of time. So I would have to go from school, walk home, which was only 5 minutes, and then wait in the garage and wait for them to come home. Or that they didn't trust me with a key. And I was like, you know, you're going to trust me to sit in a garage on my own for an hour and a half. Why can't you trust me to open the door and go inside? To look after myself. I said that in quotations. So it got to a point where all things were rosy. The honeymoon period was still there. And this is how I came to eventually live in Australia. So Tony, my stepdad, had previously lived in New Zealand for a long period of time. He loved it. They traveled, done all the things. And so he said to my mum, let's do it. Let's go on a 6-week holiday in August when Alicia's on school holidays. We'll go on a 6-week break, go to New Zealand. We'll go to America on the way. We'll go to Disneyland. Really sugarcoated the whole trip, like it was going to be the best thing that we would have ever done. And it was. It was amazing. So we went to Disneyland on the way to New Zealand, went to all these cool places in America. We went to Canada, and then we ended up in New Zealand. And we did a bit of sightseeing, stayed with some of his family. And then it kind of got to the end of the holiday, which I thought was a holiday, when they sat down with me, and I would have been 10 or 11. They sat down with me and they said, so we need to tell you that, you know how we were coming here on a holiday? Well, we're actually going to be living here now. So we're not going to be going home. And I was just like, what? I didn't get to say goodbye to my friends. I didn't get to say goodbye to my nan, who was the absolute apple of my eye. They didn't tell anyone that we were actually going to be living there either. So we just upped and gone, left.
Wow.
No one knew. No one had a clue. So we were in New Zealand. We were living in this one-bedroom apartment, like a bed set, with a literally the size of a small single garage. Had no money. They had no jobs. They had no work, nothing. And that's when all the shit hit the fan, basically. And what would have been a really nice, happy childhood for me just wasn't. It was just horrible and really scarred me. So obviously they had a lot of stress in their lives, but as a 10-year-old, are you really expected to take on that responsibility of your parents and all the stress that they're facing? Like, when I think of a 10-year-old, my daughter's only 6. That's her in a couple of years' time. I couldn't imagine making her try and understand everything that was going on. And that's when things got violent. And I was trying to call my nan. I was trying to speak to her to tell her what was going on. And my mum would just lash out at me. My stepdad would lash out on me because I was trying to contact the only person that I loved and I really trusted to say, hey, what's going on? Like, why can't I come and see you? Why can't I come home? Why can't I be with you guys? And it just got worse and worse from there. So again, like you said, with the making connections, I got put into another primary school for 6 months and met some people, met some friends, made friends. And then I had to go to another school again, because in New Zealand they do primary school and then they do intermediate, which is years 10 and 11 or years, oh no, years 7 and 8. So it's an intermediate school. So by this point, I'd already been to 4 or 5 different schools and I was just like, what, like, fuck this. Like, what's the point? What is the point of me going to a school trying to learn when I know that in a couple of months' time, you're just going to pull me out anyway and you're going to send me to another school because you want to move, you want to go somewhere. So I turned into this rebel child, basically. And I was
going to ask that.
Yeah, I was acting out. So I was in year 7 and I was wagging school. We were stealing cigarettes from people and like smoking them in the school yard. And I was getting in all to like in these little gangs and groups and hanging around with bad people because I just thought, yep, they seem cool. They seem on my level of, I don't give a shit anymore. And so I was in year 7 and I was wagging, was doing all these things, hanging out with the wrong people. Like, academically, I was good. I was great. I was a star student, but I wasn't in the sense of my attitude and the things I would do on breaks and stuff like that. So they were like, look, she's got 2 options. We either kick her out or you take her out, because do you want that on her record that she's been kicked out of school? So boom, another new school straight away. It's like number 6. And I was there for a year. And at this point, my mum and my stepdad were attempting to get residency because he'd landed a job that had given him a visa. And for the first time in what, how many years? 11 years. I had got contact with my dad. So I actually found my dad. I knew his name because my nan had said, look, this is his name. And I found him on a website called Friends Reunited. I don't know if you ever used it, but I was searching
for it. I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's years old. This was like, what, 15 years ago. And I was using the computer at school and I was on this website. And I remember I had this teacher called Nigel Watson and he came over and he was from England as well. And he was like, Alicia, what are you doing?
And I'm like, it sounds like an English name,
yeah,
to be honest.
Proper English. And he's like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be doing something on GarageBand. I can't remember. And I was like, I'm finding my dad. And he was just like, what? What? What do you mean finding your dad? And I'm like, I found him. Like, I found, this is my dad. And I messaged him. I emailed him on this Friends Reunited. And I said, hey, I think I might be your daughter. My name's Alicia. Your mum is Trish Jordan. She's my grandmother. I'd really like to talk to you and I'd like to get to know you. And behind all of that, I didn't know, whilst they were going for their residency, that they had had to actually, my mum had actually had to contact my my biological dad to get permission for me to come over. And what happened next was a little bit shady, because he'd apparently been trying to get in contact with her for years. And it only came to like realization for me that all of those years I'd actually been receiving cards and I'd been receiving gifts and I've been receiving gift cards and like little presents and stuff. And they were all from my dad from a period of when I was like 5 until I was 10. So he was seeing my nan, his mum. She was giving them to my mum, but my mum wasn't passing them on to me and saying, this is from your dad. This is, you know, she made the decision when I was younger to get him out of my life because for obvious reasons that I will completely and 100% respect, because she obviously did what was best for me at the time. But in hindsight, I'd kind of wish that I had been informed that he was trying to get in contact with me, because I think every child has the right to know their father. They have the right, if they're willing to make an effort, I think as parents, and I can say that now because I'm like, yeah, you know, it should have happened. So obviously he'd been contacted and he said there was this whole fucking case that he accused them of kidnapping me and taking me to New Zealand. He rang the principal of my school. It's like, they've stolen her. She should be in England. She needs to come back. And there was just this complete shit show. So on the same year, my mum and stepdad had gone on a holiday. They'd gone over to Australia and they'd only spent a week there. They went to the Gold Coast for a week. I stayed with them, a friend, whilst they were there. And they came back and they were like, guess what? We're moving to Australia. And I was like, oh, like I don't get a say in it. So it's not like my opinions or my emotions or my feelings are even like accepted during this period of time. And I was probably like, I was 12, 13, maybe. I can't even remember how old I was. So, about 3-4 months later, we were moving to Australia.
Gold Coast.
Gold Coast. Oh, well, it would have been nicer in the Gold Coast. We moved in with my stepdad's cousins in Logan, and I got put into a school in Logan for a couple of months, and they lived on this farm. They were really lovely people, and we were living with them for a while. They had rules. We followed them. They'd started work. We were there for a total of 12 weeks. And then what happened was his cousin, that for some reason they'd kept $1,000 in cash in the house somewhere. And they had accused me of stealing $1,000 cash. And I was just like, I haven't taken your money. I swear to this day, hands up in the air, I never touched that money. I had no clue. But they kicked us out of the house because they thought that I stole the money when I was like 12, 13. I was like, I didn't touch it. Didn't have anything to do with it. And the wife's husband was a policeman. And I was like, you can come and fingerprint me. You can come and fingerprint where the money was. I didn't take it. But my stepdad thought that I did, and he thought that I had taken the money. So did my mum. They were like, did you take it? Did you take it? And I was like, I didn't. So the two people that were supposed to trust me didn't trust me. And I was at this dodgy new school, wrong crowd again. exactly the same mentality of what's the point of being here? I'm just going to be kicked out. So I started drinking. I started smoking. I hadn't gone quite into drugs at that point, but just started drinking, smoking, going to hanging around with wrong people at school. I wasn't allowed to see anyone outside of school. So it was like from 9 till 3:30, I was like, right, I was drinking in the middle of the day. Like I was getting people to buy alcohol from the shop and I was drinking at school, going into the toilets to smoke and just doing the things that the bad kids at school do.
That was my label. Looking back, do you think, why do you think you were doing those things? Was it to try and get attention? Was it trying to impress? Was it trying to reach out?
I think it was trying to impress. It was trying to fit in with people, because when you're thrown into an environment in the middle of a school year where everyone has connections, everyone knows each other, and you're this bright, shiny new object that has got a funny accent, that isn't from around there, you know, absolutely nobody. It's a way to impress. It was like, okay, these kids do that thing, I'm going to do that too. And I could have easily just gone into, you know, putting my head down and trying, but I'd gone past that point. I was like, what's the point? Like anything that I am really good at always gets stopped in its tracks because my parents decide to move me. Like in New Zealand, I was playing netball nearly for my age group. I was amazing. I was like being scouted for. Everyone was like, you're incredible. We want you to come and play for us. And then boom, I was taken out of the country. Couldn't do it. I was a surf lifeguard in New Zealand and I was absolutely amazing at that. I was traveling, I was doing comps, and then boom, we're moving. You're getting taken out of that. We're not going to do it again.
And as a kid, it feels like every time you get good at something, they want to rip that away. It doesn't.
Yeah.
You don't understand everything else that's going on.
Yeah. Like I had when I was in the UK, I was a swimmer and I was swimming for a squad, and then we left the UK and I moved and I couldn't swim anymore. And one of the girls that was in the same squad as me went on to swim in the Olympics, and I think to myself, that could have been me. I could have been swimming in the Olympics if I had have stayed in the UK and I'd continued being able to go to training. I could have been playing for the Silver Ferns if I was in New Zealand, because I would have stayed training. And it's all of those I could have, which bring me to my future. But so then Australia, and then from Logan, got kicked out of that house. We moved down to Sydney, and we moved into Blacktown, which is not the greatest area to live in Sydney. It's pretty renowned for violence. And I went to a mainly Aboriginal school, and it was a nice school. But here I was, girl, blonde hair, accent, young. I've gone into school in the middle of the year. And we were living in a trailer park as well. So we were living in a caravan park at the time. I was wearing secondhand uniform, like just nothing to our names. And I was beaten the shit out of every single day. Like I was punched in the head. I was pushed down the stairs.
This is all at school?
Yeah, this was at school. At school. And then... There was this rumor that went around, and this was only in the period of like 6 weeks. And I was followed, and I was set up after school to be stabbed. And I was like walking down by the milk bar, and like this group of three girls were like running up behind me. And the girl that I thought was like my friend was actually in on it as well, because she was the one that was trying to set me up. And I turned around and they were running towards me, their knife in their hands. And I just sprinted and I just ran as fast as I could to get out. And from that point, after just being beaten up every single day for a good 2, 3, 4 weeks, I was just like, I don't want to go to school anymore. I don't like it. But my parents were very stressed. They'd moved to a new place. Again, starting new jobs, new things. And they got abusive towards me. My mum would physically assault me. So with my stepdad, I was still trying to communicate with my biological dad, and they didn't want me having anything to do with him. They didn't want me communicating with him. He tried to send me a phone for my birthday, and so he could communicate with me, so he could call me as and when he kind of wanted to. And that phone was used as kind of like a weapon. I had no privacy. I didn't really have any friends to message, but they were really concerned about what I would be talking to my dad about and what I would be saying to him. Yeah. So in the middle of the night, they would come in, steal my phone. Like, I'd had a password on it, and they literally would beat the password out of me until I would tell them what the password is so they could go through my phone. And I wasn't safe at home, and I wasn't safe at school. So I didn't go to school. And obviously the school started to communicate this, and they would be writing letters, but I would intercept the letters so they wouldn't get them, because I was petrified of them and what they would do to me, because I didn't feel like they would understand why I didn't want to go to school because of the way I was being treated and what was happening to me.
Yeah.
And it was just a really, really difficult time. And what had happened is they ended up getting a hold of my mom and said, look, Alicia's not coming into school. We need to get social services involved because, you know, she's not rocking up. What's happening? Is there something going on at home?
Yeah.
And she was like, I thought she was going. And so that's when I got into trouble at home. And they were like, why aren't you going? Blah, blah, blah. But instead of trying to sit down on a empathetic level and talk about it, it was, you're fucking up. You're not doing the right thing. You're the one that's making trouble. You're the one that's doing this. And I don't want to go into too much shit about what happened, but an incident occurred in our house and I ran away from home. And I went and moved in with a girl that was not from a very good area. And her parents were drug users, and she was also a drug user, as were her brothers, and as was I then, because I was living with her for a good period of time. So we were drinking, we were smoking weed, we were doing all sorts of stuff. And my parents had called the police and reported me as a missing child. And I had got in contact with my biological dad, and I'd explained the situation that had happened and how I didn't feel comfortable and I didn't want to go home because of what had happened. And he bought me a ticket. He bought me a plane ticket back to England. And I spoke to my mum and I said, I'm going back to the UK. I gave her a choice. I said, you either choose me or you choose this situation. You choose me or you choose him. And she chose him. She chose him. She chose to stay with him and let me leave and go back to the UK.
Question without going more into the story, do you think she did that because she realized that it was going to be best for you?
Oh, I know. I've never been asked that before.
I've really thrown you that. Because I don't know the rest of your story. So I wanted to stop, and I just, you know, a mother's instinct, as you would know, is to protect, and despite all the ramifications of what's happened.
In that moment,
it's like she knew that she, and I don't know the rest of the story, but she may have felt, I'm a lost cause. It's better actually if she does go now rather than, because we do have those moments where we realize we fuck up.
Yeah.
And it's, if you get it at the right moment, people can see some kind of sense.
Yeah.
It sounds like maybe she did that, but you obviously have never thought about it. So yeah, I've really stung you with that
one. Yeah, I never thought about it that way. I just thought as a young girl, I just always thought she had chosen him over me. Mm. And it really fucked me up badly because she's the only parent I ever had. So
yeah.
It was pretty crazy. So I went home. I basically got home. I went and packed my suitcase, which consisted of my PlayStation and like a few pairs of shorts and a bag. And they drove me to the airport and I flew from the UK back to England. And when I was just after I turned 13, and I just remember sitting on that plane just bawling my eyes out, thinking, I'm never going to see my mum again. I've chosen not to be a part of her life, and just thinking that she didn't love me, that she didn't, that she didn't want me.
Which is, you were rejected in this moment, and this is, I can see how emotionally hard this is for you now. And I was being sitting here waiting for this moment where you let go a little bit of the emotion because you just, been speaking so raw about it. And I'm really intrigued as to what happened next, really. And I'll usually ask a lot of questions, but I'm enjoying listening to this and you paint a picture. And I think others that are listening probably will as well. So if you want to keep continuing, that would be better than me asking a question.
Yeah, no, keen. I just remember being sat on the plane just thinking that my mum didn't love me, that she didn't want me, that she didn't want anything to do with me. And as a 13-year-old, just thinking that her life would be better without me. And my nan picked me up from the airport and I hadn't seen her in so long and she was just so happy to see me. And I just felt love when I saw her and I hugged her, and I hadn't felt loved as a child in so long. And I just felt embraced and I felt warm and I felt safe, and I hadn't felt safe in a very long time. And it was really foreign to me. It was this foreign feeling of being loved and feeling safe and just feeling complete and utter trust in someone.
Did that feel natural to the core of Alicia rather than what was happening in Australia?
No, it didn't feel natural because I'd been so, for a good four or five years, I'd been living in this state of moving and being just being this accessory, just being this pawn, basically, that was just being, just being pulled around wherever they wanted to go and what they wanted to do. And just being with her just felt really strange. And I didn't know how to accept it at first. Like she went the following day after like arriving home with her, and I'll say home because it just felt like home. She was like, she cried when she opened my suitcase and she saw that all of my personal belongings had been collected into this tiny little suitcase that was just like a few pairs of undies, a couple of pairs of leggings and a t-shirt. And so she was like, let's go shopping. My mum had never taken me shopping and been like, let's go and buy you some clothes or let's go and buy you something. And I remember going out with her and she's just like, choose something. And I was like, oh, are you sure? Like, is this okay? Am I allowed to do this? Can we do this? And it was just this foreign concept. It was just seemed just completely foreign to me. And I arrived there in, I think it was, it might have been April or maybe May. I can't 100% remember. But they enrolled me into a school, and she was just like, I just remember her saying to me, like, this is a school that you are going to stay at, and this is a school that you are going to see out, and you're not just going to be here for a year leash. You're going to be here for a while, so you can't fuck it up. Like, you can't fuck this up. This is for real now. And this is the piece of advice that will always stick with me. She said, you'll be able to choose your friends and select your friends on one hand. And she's like, I want you to remember that because you've been through all of these places, you've done all of these things. It's your time to be selective of who you let into your life now, because these are the people that are going to stay. These are the people that are going to be here for a long period of time. So just be selective. And with her saying that, when I started school properly, and I started school academically without the means to want to impress and without the means to want to just fuck everything up, basically. But inevitably I did, because everything.
Well, you're conditioned.
Yeah, it was exactly. It was just, it was there. It was waiting for me. And I started off on the right foot. And then I think it was about 2 weeks into being at school, she wanted me to settle in there first. I met my dad, and I saw my dad for the very, very first time in like 8, 9, 10 years, basically, since before I could even remember. And he knocked on the door, and I opened the door, and it was like, you know, when you see on the TV, those things of like those long lost parents that are reunited with their children, and it's like this fabulous moment. And I just opened the door and I just thought, what the hell? Like, that's my dad. That's my real dad. And he straight away wanted to be my parent. And I wasn't prepared for that, because my parents fucked me over my whole life. And I didn't want a parent. I wanted my grandmother. I wanted my nan.
Yeah.
I didn't want another mum. I didn't want another dad, because I didn't trust those people. Those people were not trustworthy in my eyes. And he tried to be dad, and that's what sent me on this downward spiral at school, because I was trying to be. He was trying to parent me, and in the background of that, I hadn't spoken to my mum since I'd arrived in the UK, because I didn't want to talk to her, because I had so many unanswered questions and just so much going on in my head as to why everything happened the way it did. And I was on social media and I was on Facebook, and during the time of me being in the UK to starting school, they were posting on social media in Australia, my mum and stepdad, of all these things that they were doing and all these things that they were getting up to, and, you know, going out for dinner and going to Sydney for the weekend. And it was like it felt like a rub in my face of my life's so much better without her here now.
Yeah.
Like, we're doing things. We've got a life. This is what I really wanted. I didn't want a kid. I didn't want her with me on this new relationship. And that's how I saw it. That's how it was absorbed by me. And so I started really fucking up at school. And I started stealing. I started shoplifting. Stupid stuff. I was sneaking out. I was going to parties. I had a really unhealthy relationship with males, basically. Because of the relationship that I didn't have with my dad. The relationship that I didn't have with my stepdad, there was massive trust issues with me and men. And I think I was very sucked in to guys, to boys at the age of like 14. And we would be going out to these parties on the weekend, and I would be doing silly things with silly people that I should later regret. I started drinking again, taking drugs. We were smoking weed. We were taking pills. I got a fake ID when I was 14. So I was going out and clubbing and partying and going out pretending I was 18 and just hanging out with the wrong people, the wrong crowd. And it just got progressively worse until one day there was a knock at the door, and it was the police, and they were there to arrest me. And my nan opened the door, and they were like, is Alicia there? And she was like, yeah, what's she done? She was like, she's under arrest for burglary, theft, criminal damage, intent, all of that. There was this list, this massive list of things of things that I was getting up to that she obviously had no idea about. And I thought I was getting away with it, but apparently not. And they were like, look, she's a minor, so we can arrest her here and take her into the station, or you can bring her down tomorrow at 4 o'clock. We'll book her in. Sorry, there's a helicopter going over. We'll charge her. And at that time, although I was completely screwing up my life through alcohol, drugs, getting arrested, just sleeping around with strange people, doing stupid stuff, I had this intention and this just complete desire to join the Navy. I wanted to join the Navy and I wanted to go travel the world and do something right, do something good, because I felt like I'd fucked up so much already. And I thought, you know, I'll leave school and that's what I was going to do. So when they came knocking on the door, I just thought, that's it. My future career plan is gone, because they won't accept me with a criminal record. And so I sat and I went there and I was like, they booked me and they checked me and I was in the police cell and they let me sit in there for 5.5 hours with nothing. They were just like, let's teach her a fucking lesson. We're locking her up. We're just keeping her in there. That's it. And I was in tears. I was crying. And they sat down and they questioned me. And I was like, yeah, I did it. I did all the things. I did it. I did it. I did it. I'm not going to – I wasn't proud of it, but I did it. And I was just like, you know, I can't believe it. I was apologetic. I was crying. And I was just like – they were like, what do you want to do with your life, Alicia? I explained that I wanted to join the Navy. And how much it meant to me, that how badly I screwed up, it was really going to affect my chances of being able to do that. And so I got off with a warning, because I was that they could see some light in me. And that's what anyone as a teenager, when I was a teenager, said, there is something in you, but you cannot see it. You're just my head of year when I was at school, he just said to me, Alicia, you were just shitting on your own doorstep. Every single time that you're coming into school high, that you're drinking during your lunch break, that you're not rocking up for classes, he's like, you have so much potential, but you cannot see it. Why can't you see it? What is wrong with you?
Can I answer that?
Yeah.
What I think it might be, I think the stability around you showed you that you didn't actually have any role models to actually base that off.
Yeah.
Like you were doing exactly what everyone around you had done. So you were just following. You thought that was normal.
Yeah.
So I can see that. And I can see personally, like, the Navy is stability.
Yeah.
Being in the Army is stability. A lot of people want that, because it's a structure, it's routine, it's something that they know subconsciously they need in life, but they haven't had it.
Yeah.
Does that ring true?
Yeah, 100% it does. Yeah, it does. And it just continued from there. I was really, like, and again, academically at school, I was excellent. And my teachers would just be like, how do you do this? Like, you are not here. You are not showing up, but you're handing, and I wasn't cheating, but they're like, you're handing in this coursework and it's excellent. Like, we can't fault you, but we need you to be here. We need you to be at school. I'm like, don't want to be at school. I hate school. I don't want to do this. And I was just a shitbag. And it got to our formal, end of year formal, and I'd done something again. I can't even remember. There was just this list. My nan, when she came over to Australia to meet my son after he was born, she brought over my school folder with, it was like 3 inches thick of just letters of things that I had done that had been sent to her. And she went, I'm going to give you these, so one day you can give them to your children. I was just like, and so I wasn't allowed to go to my school formal. And my nan and my dad just begged and pleaded and just said, look, this is what's been happening in her life. This is the longest she's ever been in one period. She's really trying here, because in between the interims of me going on a rampage and then me being calm and normal and then going on a rampage and being calm and normal. That was a cycle that I was going through. And it's only 2 years ago that I understood why I was going through those cycles. They were just like, nope, she's going to ruin it. She's going to bring something into this formal and she's just going to destroy it for everyone. And I did it, and it was a beautiful night. But once I left school, I just thought to myself, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing? And I'd applied to go to college to study uniform services so I could get into the Navy, but I could go in as an officer instead of going in as just like a skivvy. And I put my head down and I got into it. I enjoyed my social life. I enjoyed learning. I enjoyed college. I got into a long-term relationship with someone, which was good. It was the first relationship that I'd ever really been in that was longer than, you know, a weekend. So it was different, and it gave me some grounding and it gave me some normal and stability. And I stopped screwing up as much. I stopped going out and being around bad people, and then got to my 18th birthday and I'd separated with that partner or boyfriend. You don't really call them partners when you're younger, do you?
It's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Less serious. Yeah, partner's serious.
And it was on my 18th birthday. My nan had given me this beautiful birthday that she'd organized. And it was the first time that I had seen my mum properly on her own. She flew over to England for my 18th to be with me. And that just came with a whole mixed bag of emotions of she's here. She didn't come with her husband. She was here on her own. And it was nice. I never really asked her the questions that I wanted to ask her because I've always been afraid of my mum. Even to this day, I'm afraid of my mum and having serious conversations with her or talking to her. And but we connected on some level. And as soon as I turned 18, I was introduced to the wonderful world of MDMA. And that then life turned into nearly every other day occurrence where I wasn't just like I was smoking weed every day, but it then got into heavier stuff. And,
was that an avoidance and numbing, or
I think it was numbing, and it was a socially acceptable thing to do at the time. Everyone was doing it. We were following the crowd, call me a sheep, if you will. But it was a socially acceptable thing to do. And, from there, we, as a group of girls of us went away, and we went to Magaluf, which is just off an island of Ibiza. And we spent a week just partying and just going hard. And I came back and I just thought to myself, I'm going to die. Like if I'm taking these class A drugs, I'm mixing it with alcohol, I'm smoking weed, I'm going to random places, I'm waking up in strange places. Like, I'm not going to see my 21st birthday if I keep on doing what I'm doing. And I was like, I need to get out of here. Like, I think running away is my defense mechanism. Well, it was my defense mechanism because that's all I knew, because I watched my parents when things got difficult. That's it. We're up and we're leaving. That's it. We're up and we're leaving. And so I went through exactly the same process of going, nope, it's too difficult for me here. I need a change. And I upped and I left and I moved back to Australia. And it was 5 months after my 18th birthday, and it was in October. And I'd spoke to, after my mum left, I said, look, I really want to try and build a relationship with you because we have never had one. And I think if we don't do it now, we never will. I would like to come back to Australia and try this. I don't want to live with you.
How hard was that for you to accept that you're going to try, but you may have been shut down completely?
It was, I think it was a bag of just mixed emotions about it all, because in one aspect of it, I was doing it selfishly for me because I was just going down all the wrong paths. Like,
yeah,
all of the extracurricular activities I was participating in completely drew me away from joining the Navy. I went for the interview and that was it. I was like, nah, don't want to do it. It's too hard. It's too hard. I want to be able to go out and party and do all the things. But I've been going out since I was 14. So I had a good like 4.5 years of going out and partying and doing all the things. And on another part, I was with, I had an amazing group of girlfriends and I envied the relationships that they had with their mums. I would see them going out and, or calling them and ringing them and texting them, and just these like beautiful relationships of just love. Mm. And I craved that.
Yeah.
I had it with my nan, but I wanted it with my mum as well. And I just thought, I want some of that. I want to be able to say, yeah, I tried. And I did try. And I moved over there and we went through the honeymoon period of, yay, this is great, we're like together again. And but there was always an elephant in the room, because my stepdad had never, and to this day has never ever, spoken to me about what happened in Sydney and why it happened. And so there's this always this elephant, and there's always a part of me that, especially when I first moved back to Australia, I hated him, and I always did. Mm. Because I felt like he was the reason that I didn't have a mum, that my mum didn't want anything to do with me. And I did, I hated him. So when we got back there, when I moved back in with them for a little while, it was just incredibly awkward. And those feelings of safety and walking into a house that you feel comfortable and loved in, like I had been experiencing for 5 years living with my nan, had just gone away, and they were just gone again.
Yeah.
And I'd moved to a place where I knew no one, which I was used to, but the way that I had explained it to people was, it was so much easier being younger and moving to a new place, because you were put into this social environment of schooling where you were made to make friends and you were made to do things because you were at school together. Whereas moving as an adult, you're not going to school and you're not in those environments. So it was kind of just me and them. And I've been an independent person since before I can remember, because I had to grow up a lot quicker than what I should have. So when I went back there, there was all these rules, which I could completely understand, because at the end of the day, it's their house, it's their home, it's their rules. But in my eyes, I was an adult. I've been working since I was like 15. I've been adulting. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I was independent.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
If I want to come home at 9 o'clock as a 19-year-old, like, I can come home at 9 o'clock as a 19-year-old. But that wasn't the case. And I really struggled, really, really struggled. And I've been with them for like 4 or 5 months, and I've met this girl who was from the UK as well through them. And we were like, right, the only thing we've got in common with each other is that we're both here, we're both from the UK, and we both know fucking no one. So let's go out. It was like my first time going out in the CBD and going out in like 6 or 7 months. And it was good. But then I found myself slipping back into these creature, just these habitual habits, like of, you know, I was on Chapel Street and it's like, do you want this? Do you want to take that? And I was like, yep, okay, that's fine. I'm here to have a good time. here for a good time, not a long time, blah, 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 blah. And it started again. And the habit that I moved to Australia to stop started again. And I was like, what is going on? Like, why do I keep on doing this? And I had no direction. So I was like, that's it. I'm going to do my PT course. So I enrolled to do my PT course. And I was like, right, I need to become healthy for that. And I stopped going out. I stopped drinking. I stopped taking drugs again. And I was like, this is going to be my focus. This is my 3-month focus. And I did it. And from that point, it was, I started in like December and it finished in February. And during that 3-month period, I met Jason in 2013 and he broke, who's now my fiance, but he broke my heart nearly 7 years ago.
That sounds like a Jason thing to do.
Yeah, actually. He was a dog back then. Nah, I love him. We met on New Year's Eve. I was like being pestered by some Italian man and he came up the elevator and I was just like, please, 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 can you just pretend to be my boyfriend for 20 minutes? You look sober. You look normal. And he was like, okay then. And I didn't find out until 7 o'clock in the morning that he'd lived in Madura. And we got along like a house on fire. And it was just like my soul connected to him instantly. And I was like, this is the man. Like, this is the person. I know it sounds so cheesy, but we connected on just a different level that night. And then I was going up to see him and he never came to see me in Melbourne. And then he was like, you know, I've just got out of a relationship, not really ready to start a new one. So yeah, see you later, Alicia. I was like, oh, broke my heart. And I started working at this gym and that's where I had this whirlwind romance that brought me my beautiful little girl with a gentleman that I worked with. I'm not going to mention any names here. And he was 10 years older than me. We were really, really, really bad for each other from the get-go.
Yep.
Like fighting like cat and dog, arguing every single second, even just as work colleagues. And
were you mirroring the relationships you'd seen around you growing up?
Basically, I thought it was normal. I thought it was normal.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I saw my mum go through that. And so that's what a relationship looked like. That's what in a little girl's eyes and or in a little boy's eyes even, it doesn't matter. It's either or. If you're seeing that modeling of relationships in young eyes, that's how influenced you are as a child. And I thought, that's normal, that's okay. And after only 6 weeks of being together, we moved in together because it just, the time was right. I needed to get out of living with my mum. He needed to get out of living with his housemates. So we moved in together. And then after 3.5 months of being together, we were pregnant. And he was obviously at an age where it was okay. He was kind of happy about it. He was like, yeah, I'm kind of good to be a dad. And I was only 19, so I wasn't in that headspace of this is okay, this is great. But because he was excited, I felt like I had to mimic that excitement too when we found out.
Yeah.
And it was just, I actually spoke about it on my podcast last week and I think I'm ready because I thought that I would be talking to you about this. And I spoke about how I was young. I was only 19 and I didn't want to have a baby and I didn't want her.
Yeah.
Like, and I say her, but I didn't want to have that baby. I didn't want to be pregnant because I was scared. And I was in this really awful relationship that we were just always arguing and we'd only been together 3 months and it was constant fighting back and forth. And, for the first like 4 to 6 weeks of me being pregnant, I'd looked at how to terminate. I'd looked at abortion. I had looked at how to do it myself. Like, I was just in a really, really, really dark place, in the sense of I didn't want to be pregnant. I didn't want to be 19 and pregnant. I wanted to start my career.
Was it also the fact, and we'll sort of work through this pretty quickly, was it you didn't want to bring up a child the way you'd been brought up? Was that part of the situation, because you didn't want to have to put someone through what you went through?
Yeah. I didn't want to be my mum.
Now, not trying to like skip anything, we still want to get whatever's, but how in the last 6 years since Poppy's come along, how did that decision come about? And because you've just gone through so much stuff, and I honestly had no idea about any of it. That's just how it is. I'm actually in shock in terms of the person I know is so raw and honest and in tune with herself and everything I see. And when we've met and spoken and knowing Jace and all that, it's like listening to this, it's like, how did you become you now? And that's what I would love Poppy, to hear about.
It's her. But yeah, it's literally.
It was her.
She saved my life. Like, so I was at a point of like 4 to 5 weeks of pregnancy, and I didn't want her. I didn't want to have this baby. And I Googled it, as you do. And so there's this term for it, basically. But so you know how you have postnatal depression? You can have prenatal depression at the same time. So it's not, your mind is not accepting what's going on inside your body. And I started a journal and I started writing, and I called the embryo that was growing inside of me at the time, I called it my poppy seed, because that's how big it was. And that's how I named her, because I was so depressed. I had no one to talk to. I couldn't talk to my mum. I was too scared to even tell her that I was pregnant. And I journaled every single day, every single emotion that I went through throughout my whole pregnancy. And I grew so much as a person in that 9 months of pregnancy to become a mum, that if I didn't have her, I would not be where I am today. I would not be doing what I do today. I wouldn't be helping the people that I help. And she changed my life. Like, everything that I am is totally to do with my daughter, and it's all her.
That was your snap point.
Yeah, 100%.
I have to turn it around, or this girl's going to grow up and go down the path I did, and have control.
And she would have. And so we brought this beautiful little girl into the world, and we were in this baby bubble, and I was a complete psychotic bitch whilst I was pregnant, and my hormones were all over the place. And he didn't understand that. He wasn't very supportive of it. And obviously he didn't know what the fuck was going on with me. I was just crazy. Like, yeah. I was fully crazy. Like, we would fight, and I was like 36 weeks pregnant, sleeping on the bedroom floor. Like, he'd kick me out of the bed. The relationship was toxic. And so we had her, and we would just argue and fight in front of her when she was a baby. And I just said to myself, and I thought to myself, she was about 9 months old, and we were still fighting and still arguing. Like, we had good days, obviously, and good weeks, as you do, but it was just more negative. And I vowed to myself, I said, I would rather be happy and alone than miserable with him. And going through everything that I went through as a child, and watching all of the relationships that my mum had gone through and she'd put me through and made me witness, I said to myself, I am not letting my little girl grow up to see that this is how a relationship should be, and for her to be treated like shit and not respected. Yeah. I want her to see that I am a strong woman and that she can be a strong woman too. And if I was to find love, that that person would respect me and love me in the way that I deserve and that I know that I need to be loved. Because I grew so much emotionally and mentally that I knew my, like, I didn't know my worth whilst I was in that relationship, but after I did. And I just never, ever, ever want her to see anything bad. Not like anything bad, obviously, but like I don't want. I want to protect her. Like
protection from
things
that are so unnecessary suffering because there's going to be suffering and she's going to learn lots of things the hard way. But
not towards her and not towards me. Like if the relationship I was in right now, if it was, and I know it's so easy to say this. When you're not in, and I've been in this situation, like I've seen it happen, but I would always protect my children first and make sure that they're mentally protected, because I was diagnosed with PTSD and depression 2 years ago after I had my son, because of everything. I was going through this cycle of just self-destruction emotionally. Repetitively. And I thought that I had bipolar because I was like, there's something wrong with me. Like I'm going through these cycles of for 4 weeks, I'm really great. And then I am in this rock bottom depression that I can't come out of, that there's no joy in my world. There's no happiness. There's no nothing. Like I hate myself. I hate everyone around me. I hate my children. I hate my partner. I can't do this anymore. And, my psychologist sat down with me and she was like, this is after quite a few sessions. She's like, do you know what you have? And I'm like, oh, well, I think I've got bipolar and I feel like I really need to be treated for it, because I think my fiance is going to leave me because he just doesn't know what's going on with me. He can't keep up with my mood changes and what the hell like to expect one day coming into the next. And she was like, no. And she explained it to me and there was just this weight that just lifted off my shoulders, because for years I thought that I was fucking crazy and that I was the problem and that there was something wrong with me, that it was all here, but it necessarily wasn't. And I sought forgiveness, and Jason took me, this sounds really corny, but he took me to this Tony Robbins event, Unleash the Power Within.
Yeah.
And it was the, I think if I hadn't have gone to that for that weekend, I wouldn't have been able to emotionally develop and grow the way that I have in the last 3.5 years. Because it made me really go outside of myself and look within and playing the blame game for years. It was my mum, it was my dad, it was this, it was this, it was that, it was that. Instead of going, hey, let's just have a look at what was happening at that time. Let's have a look at what you inflicted upon yourself that you then went on to blame your mum for because she wasn't there, that you went on to blame your dad for because he wasn't around. They were like, it was like, did they force you to go and burgle the place that you did? Did they force you to go and do the criminal damage? And no, they didn't. It was me. But it was this narrative and this story that I was telling myself for years, that I was the victim, that I need to just feel sorry for myself. Like my life's been screwed up. Like I've had no stability. I've had no control. And it was the most powerful weekend. And I rang my mum up crying. And I just said, I forgive you, because she'd never apologized to me. But maybe she didn't need to, but I just rang her and I said, I'm really sorry. And I forgive you for all that we've experienced, all that we've gone together. I don't want to forget about it, but I know that I need to move on from it. And I feel like this is the first step that I can take to do that. And I've never done it with my stepdad. And I feel like that's probably something I still need to do and I still need to address, because it might shift and move some things that are still within my heart and my body.
Stuck.
Yeah, stuck. I don't know if you've ever had Reiki, but
I know about it, yeah.
Yeah, so it's all my throat chakra here is always really congested and super tight.
Yeah.
Because there is so much that I want to say that I don't speak. And I think maybe if I was to do that, it might release something. I'm not sure. But
it's still also very challenging because you don't know what's going to come from that.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, you just got to be the best mentally prepared you can be to have those conversations, because, and it, you've also got to be realize that you might not get what you want out of the conversations. So, I think that Reiki, I haven't done Reiki. I've done seen a kinesiologist.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite weird, but when they say the stuff, you're like, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, and it just clicks.
So, yeah. So we'll wrap it up there, because we're reaching an hour and a half. We might just have to do another podcast to talk more about exactly what you're doing now. But briefly, can you talk about what you do now and your target market and stuff like that?
Oh, 100%. So, what I do now is I want to be the person to people that I know that was missing in my life. And I know that everyone in some area or aspect is missing a support person, that's missing someone that's on their side, that's in their corner. And I'm the person to people that I needed, basically, to say, you know, what you're going through is okay. What's happening in your life is all right. Like, not giving medical and professional advice, but sometimes you just need that person to listen to you. And what I have found out is we don't always have that, because, you know, we've got our friends and our family, but sometimes it's to do with your friends and family. So you can't always talk to them. You can't always support them. And I really found that through health and fitness. Like, I never wanted to be a shredded fitness model. I never wanted to be this pinup girl. Like, Jason was a part of this program that I formed my own, like, hate club against, basically. Because I felt like that was, not going to mention any names, but I felt like that was all it was about. And I was just like, that is not what health and fitness is about. It's not about having a six pack. It's not about being shredded. Like, it's not about that. I don't agree with it. And, I formed my own opinions, and I think that's a powerful thing to do, because as women and as mums, we are completely always thrown in our face that this is the way you're supposed to look. This is what you're supposed to do. This is like, do your squats, get your booty. Like, oh, you're not sexy if you don't look this way. And it's like, well, that's not fucking true. Like, you're sexy and you are absolutely stunning to someone. And that someone is you. And that's all that has to matter. And I was just so fed up with being it pushed in my face that, you know, you need to eat 7 times a day. You need to have this. You need to have that. You need to have abs. You need to do this. And I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to spread bullshit, basically. So, well, not bullshit, because it isn't. Each to their own. But like 100%, each to their own. And if that way works for someone, that's totally cool. But I think as a postnatal mum, I was just so vulnerable. I was really vulnerable in what was supposed to happen next. Like, my body was saggy. Like, my vagina was destroyed. Like, just my body was just broken. Like, I nearly died having her. And I was just like, nah, this is not cool. And there was just this pressure. There's just enormous pressure. So I'm really proud that over the last 4.5 years, I've put my blood, sweat and tears into bringing postnatal women and mothers together to make sure that they don't feel like there is pressure on them, so that they can feel vulnerable and they can ask questions about their body and just make them feel safe, because you're in this whole new skin, you're going through this whole new journey, and you don't necessarily always have the support that you need. And it's always just been more than a gym. It's a community, and it's an online community. It's a face-to-face community, to just feel secure and not feel scared and be able to talk to people about more than just having a child that is the same age yep. as the other child. And all of the horrible and harrowing stories that come with fertility, that come with having a baby, that the journey to try and conceive a baby. Like I work with so many people that have gone through a journey to get their baby, and just because you have that baby there doesn't mean that the pre-work and everything that you've just experienced beforehand that doesn't just go away because you've got this little bundle of joy in your arms. Like None of these things are spoken about in face-to-face. Yeah, you can read a blog about it, but you need to talk to people too. And that's what I do.
So people do want to check out Alicia, go to Technical Fitness on Instagram, Facebook and website, and I will put all the links in the show notes. But I think that might be a good podcast in itself to actually talk more in detail about what you do now. Because I've got to shuffle off. So it was a pleasure having you on.
No, thank
you. And we'll definitely tee up another time to chat more about that other stuff. I think it'll be really good to talk about body image and females and pregnancy. And I think this is definitely a story for another day, but the social media norm and before and afters and all that.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot more power to that. So thank you for joining me today.
No, thank you for having me.
That's all right. And make sure you get back to Jason, the kids.
I know. I'm going to hide here. I'm just going to talk out loud, pretend I'm still talking to you.
All right. Thanks, Alicia.
Thank you, mate. I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Power, Strength and Vulnerability, the mental health podcast. If anything in this podcast has brought up difficult feelings, please call Lifeline on 13 1144. For any further information, or if you want to bring your story to life, contact Shane at shane@vitalityfit.com.au. That's VITALITYFITT.com.au.